And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Reminder that coming up tomorrow on the program, Baltimore City Police Commissioner Designate Daryl D'Souza joins me here in Studio A. We'll discuss efforts to rebuild trust between police and the community following the explosive case against Daniel Herschel and Marcus Taylor. Officers in the Gun Trace Task Force, a federal jury found them guilty yesterday of racketeering and fraud. This verdict does come amid signs of progress. As of today, Baltimore City has gone 11 days without a homicide. That's the longest number of consecutive days without a murder in our city in 3 years. Daryl D'Souza joins me here tomorrow on midday. The actions of the officers in the Gun Trace Task Force that were chronicled during the course of the trial were stunning to many white people. And to many people of color, they came as no surprise at all. There is a long history of unconstitutional policing in our city and in many other places, particularly in communities of color. The history of inequality and oppression of people of color is on the mind of both of my next guests, who are chefs and experts in the culinary arts. Michael Twitty is a food historian and an author. His new book is called The Cooking Gene, A Journey Through African-American Culinary History in the Old South. It's part personal memoir, part history, and part cookbook. It's a startling and poignant chronicle of how people held in bondage with little to nothing of their own created a culinary tradition and a lasting cultural identity, and how the author came to understand his own identity by studying the ways in which his ancestors cooked. Michael Twitty joins us from the studios of NPR in Washington. Michael, it's good to talk to you again. Welcome back.
Hi, good afternoon.
And Chef David K. Thomas is here as well. He's the executive chef at Baltimore's modern soul food restaurant, Ida B's Table. That's named for Ida B. Wells, the famous African-American journalist and activist who was born just a couple years before the Civil War. David, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you for having me back. Good to see you. Hey, Mike, how are you doing, man?
Hey, man, what's going on?
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, we got two buddies right here, one in Washington, one in Baltimore, but everybody here on Midday, and I'm grateful to both of you for being here. Michael, I was so taken by this book. I was just saying to David before we went on the air that the quality of the writing, the beauty of the prose is really, really astonishing. I mean, it's a lyrical joy to read. You write at one point that memory, as a cook, as a chef, memory is my most indispensable ingredient. When I find it, I hoard it. And I was so taken by that. This book is really a chronicle of your personal journey to sort of find out about yourself through the history of the ancestors in the time of slavery. You have figured out how they cooked, what they cooked, where they cooked, the methods, the implements. You have really immersed yourself in this.
Well, thank you. And I also wanted to make it a roadmap back to the continent. A lot of, you know, my inspiration really came from the fact that several years ago, my former partner, who is a MICA graduate, and I decided to do this tour, the Southern Discomfort Tour. He came up with a name and thought it was silly. And I said, no, that's really important. It's really, you know, it's critical. And we did it, raised money for an Indiegogo, did it. And then I had this huge amount of information, you know, about my family, about the places we went to. I got to see the entire South, Appalachia, the Chesapeake Bay, Northern Florida, Louisiana, you name it. You know, we saw it, East Texas. So I had this, and I found out my family tree was spread across the whole South. But more than that, I wanted people to read this book, especially folks who are of African descent and who are of African-American heritage, and be able to follow those food steps back to where their people came from, then back across the Atlantic. DNA testing has been major for me, but also connecting family lore and names and words and just kind of stringing it along. So it's kind of, it's part of my passion, and it really goes down to we're the only ethnic group community that doesn't have this true old country experience. And I wanted to write this book to give us back that experience.
And Dave Thomas, Mike writes in this book, there is no chef without a homeland. Hmm. Do you yourself feel informed by the forebears that you have and your ancestors in the African American, not just the cooking community and the culinary community, but the forebears like Ida B. Wells, whom you named this restaurant after.
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, we have to, you know, I mean, for me, I have to acknowledge those that came before me. And Michael and I have had this conversation before. And he's
over dinner at his restaurant.
Yeah. But he's inspired me to really go down the path that I've decided to go with Ida B's Table. You know, it's one thing to cook good food, but it's another thing to try to tell a story with it. And this is not his first writing that I've had a chance to read. So I've been inspired by Michael for a number of years. And, you know, the history of food in this country, you know, quiet as it's kept, there would be no Southern food without slave food. Right. There would be no soul food without Southern food. There'd be no barbecue or Creole. One would even
There'd
venture
no
to say
American
Cajun.
Food, period.
Exactly. There would be no American cuisine without slave food. So it's very important for me. And if we're going to name a restaurant after someone who fought for truth, then we got to tell the whole truth.
And Michael, you write that the Atlantic has been an incredible experiment in how an enslaved population could get away with enslaving the palates of the people who enslaved them. Which
That's
is
right.
a really fascinating observation. I mean,
think about this. Who in the world, slavery has, we all know this, slavery is still a part of the human condition. You know, 1/5 of the planet is enslaved right now. You know? But here's the question. Of all these enslaved people, in the history of mankind, humankind, womankind, which population turned it upside down on its head? We blackified everything we touched. No other, the Mongolians, the Romans, the Greeks had thousands and thousands of enslaved people. What happened to them? They all got assimilated. We went in, flipped it on them, and made it like, wow, if we didn't have these people, we wouldn't be able to exist. And you got it. That's what's the genius of our ancestors.
Michael Twitty is the author of The Cooking Gene, A Journey Through African-American Culinary History in the Old South. David Thomas is the executive chef of Ida B's Table. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. Let us know if you have a favorite recipe, a favorite memory, a favorite experience. If you've been to Ida B's Table, let us know what you thought of that. Linnell and I were there Saturday night and had a wonderful time, as we always do. It's a terrific place. Dave Thomas, Mike writes that the food is often all we have as a window into the past, because so much else is lost. And I was taken by that observation as well, because there is, it's not like we're studying people who, you know, had jobs or graduated from a university that we could track their academic records or track their financial success or something like that. These were forgotten people. These were abused, violated people who were not even thought of as people. It was chattel slavery. So food really is an amazing window into that world.
Well, I mean, food, those recipes, you know, are the stories of our ancestors that we can still physically touch and taste. Not a lot of it still exists. You know, Michael probably knows better than anybody how much this country has tried to destroy the history of slavery. There's been some time, I think in the last year or two, where they've been trying to take down these monuments to some of these Confederate soldiers. And on one camp, you have an argument that they should, and there's another side that says we shouldn't. I don't know either way, but I think there's got to be a way for us to preserve the history. It's an ugly history,
right.
But our Jewish brothers and sisters will not allow us to forget the Holocaust.
Right.
And we're talking about 6 million maybe plus Jews that were killed during the Holocaust. The numbers are not in completely on the slave trade, but there's estimates of in excess of 10 plus million.
Right.
So why should we allow that history to be forgotten? This country was created on the backs of slaves. We can't allow that to be forgotten. I won't allow it to be forgotten.
Yeah, and culturally, I mean, Michael Twitty, you're exactly right. So many things have been blackified. I mean, when I think, like, in my former life, I'm a musician, right? So when we think about what American music has contributed to the global scene of music, and you think about gospel music, spirituals,
the blues,
jazz, and you might add to that, you know, hip hop. You might add to that the American Broadway musical, which is a largely Jewish contribution. But say 4 or 5 out of the 6 are African American musical traditions, and food, it seems to me, is as pervasive in our culture. The African American food is as pervasive as music is. And Michael Twitty, I was really taken by a quote by a woman named Tambra Ray Stevenson, who started a thing called Native Soul, and she links food, racism, power, and justice. She says they're all linked, and I was so interested to see that food is included in that list.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, my friend and colleague activist Ron Finley, you know, I quote him in the book twice when he says, growing food is like growing money. Hmm. And he also says that drive-thrus kill more brothers than drive-bys. And it was just like, okay. See, that brother's deep. He's from you know, L.A., struggling to keep, you know, South Central, and not rebranded and gentrified. But also growing food in the actual streets, growing food in every possible inch of ground. That's what our forefathers and foremothers did. You know, David and his wife were just, I think, geniuses. And when we went to the restaurant, they did the Cooking Gene dinner. By the way, Tim Reed was there. That was kind of awesome.
Actor.
I told him, I said, Frank's Place was the reason why I wanted to be a chef. Because finally got to see a black chef on TV, and I was like, man, I want to be, I don't know what his name was. Was his name Bub? What was the chef's name? He was like this big brother on TV, and he was challenging people to, like, have the best gumbo recipe. I said, I want to be that brother. But David, like, did it perfectly. Like, he showed that audience, like, he's not trying to, like, take the soul food out of context. It's in context. But what he did was, he showed that whole audience that soul food could be as gourmet as anybody else's cuisine, could be healthy without it being like a sermon. It's about quality ingredients. It's about the feeling behind the food. It's not just about, it's, I think people take that celebration food and they turn that into soul food. That's not the entire corpus of soul food. And so I was so impressed how beautiful it looked and how it spoke to the different layers of our history. And how it felt like coming home. And as he talked, well, the first thing we did when we sat down together, David, is remember how what came up first? Our grandmothers.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was like our grandmothers were right beside us,
man.
Talking with us as we talked to each other, as we talked to the audience. And so it was that kind of level of, food is fuel. It's the emotional aspect as well. This is the one thing we could give each other without being, you know, being lorded over.
Yeah.
Michael Twitty is the author of the 2017 Kirkus Prize finalist, The Cooking Gene. Chef David K. Thomas is the executive chef at Ida B's Table. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take your calls, your emails, your comments, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. To find us on Twitter, @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's midday. If you're just joining us, it's What You Got Cooking. My guests are the culinary historian and author Michael Twitty. He's the author of The Cooking Gene, and Chef David K. Thomas of Ida B's Table, a modern soul food restaurant down on Pleasant Street in Baltimore. If you'd like to share some of your favorite recipes, some of your favorite memories of your grandma or your mom or your uncle and aunt who are great barbecuers or great cooks in any way, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. So Dave Thomas, Michael writes, our food was never just food. It was medicine and a gateway to good fortune, and a mystical lubricant between the living and the dead. I think that's just such beautiful writing, first of all, Mike. Thank you very much. But that really, and your restaurant, the experience of being in your restaurant, I've been there for lunch and for dinner. I've seen it crowded in both occasions. There's a vibe. There's an the experience of being in the building, in that space is, dare I say, it's unlike other restaurants that I go to. It's a special place.
Well, man, thank you. And that's what we're going for. You know, just to piggyback off of what Michael was saying before the break, food for us was survival. You know, we were the original hunters and gatherers. You know, and I have this conversation all the time, and it was partly because of the conversations that I had with Michael briefly. You know, you don't grow up or you don't go out wanting to eat chitlins. You don't want to eat pig feet or the cheeks or oxtail because that's what you want to eat. That's because that's all you had to eat. And we just learn over time how to make it delicious. And that was survival for us. You know, if you had a choice between a pig's foot and filet mignon, not too many people are going to have a question about which way they're going to go. But for those African slaves, they didn't have a chance. They didn't have a choice to decide. So these things have just been passed down through our history, and now we love them. It is a part of our culture, and we just make them delicious. And what we're trying to do at IWB's Table is kind of just continue in that tradition, add some different flavors to it while still remaining rooted in our history. So I hope we're successful in doing that. Yeah, we keep trying.
I mean,
so.
I just got to tell you, as a white boy, you know, who goes to the restaurant, you know, just, and we were there with, you know, friends who were black, but we were just, for me as a white guy, being in that environment is really nourishing and wonderful, because you get a sense of the history with every dish that's on the menu. I had scallops, and this rabbit and dumpling soup thing that you had. Mm-hmm. I mean, I shouldn't call your foods right. Things, Dave. I'm sorry. But it was just delicious. And I wouldn't have thought of it as soul food necessarily. Mm-hmm. But as you say, you're redefining that. And Michael Twitty, you know, when you talked about food never just being food, 50 pages later in the book, you say, we've come to this strange cultural moment where food is both tool and weapon. What do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, I'm going to back him up and be like, I made rabbit and dumpling down in Mississippi last year by the Antebellum Kitchen. So that's way back. That's a throwback.
Wow.
We should probably get, what's his name, Bill O'Reilly to come to your restaurant and learn some more about black people. But that's for another day.
So, I mean, I don't know. So is rabbit and dumplings a famous soul food? For me, it just seemed like this incredibly gourmet thing that I got.
Rabbit. Is like was the you know our everyday chicken, because it was an animal that was, you know, infested our gardens. You had to get rid of it so it wouldn't eat your produce, and it was thousands of them available. It's not like today where you see one little rabbit, you get excited. I mean, you got to remember back in the day when things were country, everybody had these things all the time. But food is weapon. I think it goes like this. One of the things that I have been tagged with, and sometimes I don't like being tagged with it, is this discussion about cultural appropriation. But I think it's still important. We'll stop talking about it when people stop appropriating. But the bottom line is that people need to understand appropriation isn't culture sharing. It's cultural diffusion happens in a healthy multicultural society. In other words, we realize we're biting off each other, but doing so in a way that nobody's feelings are hurt. It just is. Cultural appropriation is when one group bites off the other and then uses its power dynamic to suppress the original while amplifying the crossover and not to the advantage of the people who created it. And in the culinary field, I think it's less a question of white chefs, particularly white male chefs, going after, you know, other cultures and claim them as their own, but it's more like food media saying, oh my God, this is so novel and interesting and wonderful. That's my white people voice. And then going,
very convincing, by the way.
Oh, see, there you go. I'm going to EGOT in white people. But the bottom line is, you know, it's more like said chefs not actually taking responsibility and saying, you know what, guys? No, this is not about what I created. I was inspired by. Like my good friend Chris Shepherd in Houston, Texas, he had a restaurant down there, amazing place. And what he would do is he would say, if you think my pho is cool, you should see the pho. You see the pho that comes from my colleague here, this restaurant, my colleague there. He gave credit where credit is due.
Right.
And celebrated that. And here in Baltimore, you have Spike Jonze, who we're going to work with Denzel Mitchell, and Fish Pepper that I started writing about is now a thing. And it comes from a black grower. I mean, that to me is the what culinary justice looks like, as opposed to, you know, everything else. So that's why food is a weapon.
John writes an email. He says, I was a judge at the Maryland Governor's Cup with David. I feel strongly that David's palate and influence at our table, the diversity of our group of judges as a whole, led to a more representative, accurate judging. So it's, I mean, how would you assess the status of black chefs in the sort of culinary scene across the country? Because there now is a culinary scene, which I didn't even know existed, but all of a sudden there are all these cooking shows and there are entire cable channels devoted to people cooking, you know, in silly ways. Some of these competitions are crazy. I mean, here's a box of nails and a rope, make dinner, you know? I mean, but it's like, I mean, David Thomas, you're in the business. Ida B's is not your first restaurant. You've been at this a while. You're an experienced chef. I mean, is there, are these the halcyon days for black cuisine or black chefs?
I mean, I think we'd all like to think so. I don't know if that is true or not. I know that some of us are getting some recognition, but we can't be satisfied with that. You know, I have a friend on the other side of the country, Eduardo Jordan, who owns Solar and June Baby, who him and I share the same vision in terms of the culinary history and kind of speaking that language. But I mean, there are many other more talented chefs out there than myself that will probably never get recognized. And that's sad, you know, so that's why I am, you know, doing what we call these pop-up collaborations, you know, once a month in my restaurant where I'll bring in a different chef from different cultures. And we will create some dishes through the lens of Southern soul food with influences of different cultures. So, I can't say that we've arrived. I don't think I'll ever be able to say that. But I think, especially in this day and time right now, under this current administration, I think a lot more people are trying to help get out a message and or tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what Ida B's Table is and why it's important to me is that it's about us reclaiming our own narrative.
And Michael Twitty, one of the ways you do that, and you give these, you speak all over the country, and you give these plantation dinners where, and it's important to you to not only cook recipes the best that you can reconstruct that were cooked in slave kitchens, but you use the implements. You've learned how to do measurements, you know, that are not cups and teaspoons and tablespoons. Why is it important to you to embrace all of the techniques, the cooking techniques, and the actual pots, pans, and spoons of slaves when you're making these dinners?
So the enslaved cook was one of the most accomplished, skilled individuals in the plantation community. And they were not pushovers. They were not, it wasn't like Gone with the Wind, you know. I struggled to convince African Americans about this because they remember the sermon that Malcolm X gave about the house Negro versus the field Negro. And while there are some true elements in that speech, most of it isn't. The cook was feared. The cook was respected. The cook had control over whether or not you had diarrhea that night.
Yeah.
So, or could poison you. So the kitchen was this tremendous place of resistance, as well as maintaining the culture. And like I said, when we got white kids to eat African food, that changed the game forever. So from 1750 onward, you know, the South eats black. That's amazing. We, you know, and it preserves so much of our culture, you know, hidden in plain sight. But I want people to see how skilled our ancestors were. I want them to see there were male cooks. I want them to see that There was so much innovation and so much improvisation and, you know, borrowing of different native European and African traditions all together. And then those cook's hands, those traditions were shaped.
Michael Twitty is the author of The Cooking Gene. That's unfortunately all the time we have. Let me give Stephanie the last word. She writes us an email. She says, like kale was some new discovery. Collards, kale, and turnip greens, been cooking and eating them forever. I'm 50 plus. Nothing new under the sun, Stephanie. Thank you so much. I'm sorry I couldn't get to all the emails. But David Thomas, Michael Twitty, thank you both so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael Twitty, again, the book is called The Cooking Gene, A Journey Through African-American Culinary History in the Old South. In the Old South, David K. Thomas is a food consultant and educator and the executive chef at Ida B's. That's it for us today. Reminder that upcoming tomorrow, Police Commissioner-designate Daryl D'Souza joins me. And looking ahead to next week, Governor Larry Hogan will be my guest here on Midday. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. I'm Tom Hall. Appreciate your listening. Have a great day.